From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in January when music legend David Bowie passed away at the age of 69. Tributes poured in from around the world, tributes in just about every form, some of them artistic forms. But since Bowie's passing, to our knowledge anyway, there have been no new artistic works using his music. Until now, the Rochester City Ballet, taking a bit of a risk, having some fun in an effort to reach new audiences. This weekend, they'll have the world premiere performance of this Bowie ballet after securing the rights to 9 David Bowie songs. So when you think ballet, do you typically think David Bowie? Probably not. But the City Ballet wants to broaden the scope of their choreography and their performances. And it's not just David Bowie in this weekend's shows. You'll hear U2 soon enough. We might see ballet choreographed to Pink Floyd and the Beatles. Our conversation this hour focused on growing audiences, choreographing Bowie, and what's next. Let me welcome my guest for the hour. The man responsible for this is David Palmer, the artistic director of the Rochester City Ballet. Welcome, David. How are you?
Very well. Thank you, Evan.
Also here from the company is Kelly Moeller, a Rochester City Ballet company member who is sadly injured right now. This is, again, we're having so much fun talking about this performance and you have to sit it out. Is that correct?
Yes, but I've been there. I was there in the beginning and I've been there throughout the process. So I've still gotten to enjoy it.
I mean, are injuries common for people?
Oh, absolutely.
I have to imagine they are.
Yeah. We're professional athletes, you know, so we're always working our bodies to the max.
Yep. And I think of ballet, I think of gymnasts, and most of the ballet members and most of the gymnasts I know, there's never a point where you're not injured in some fashion.
Absolutely.
You know, just playing through pain,
yep,
performing through pain. So nice to have you here
Thank you.
And also with us is John Kovach, director of the University of Rochester's Institute for Popular Music. We always like to bring John in when we get a chance to talk about big names in music, and not too many bigger than Bowie. But John, I was asking, Bowie and ballet, and you said?
I think it's fantastic. It's a great way of focusing people's attention on the music itself via ballet. So I think it's a wonderful new dimension.
Well, let's talk about how this happened and let you know what's coming up. It's Ballet on the Edge, and again, the world premiere performance of this ballet, May 13th through the 15th. That's coming up where, David Palmer? Where can people see it?
At Nazareth Performing Arts Center.
And that's coming up the 13th through the 15th. This was your, I guess this is your idea, right? We blame
yes.
you for this.
Yes, I am the one to blame.
Or the one to thank, I think, is what people may be saying this weekend. Why Bowie? Why did you want to do this?
I've wanted to do something to David Bowie's work, he just had such a fantastic take on the decades that we've all existed, and the times. I think that to me, and I think to many in my generation and the generation before, the generation since, particular songs place you in certain places. For me, the Let's Dance album, that was my early times in New York City, and so a lot of those songs just put me right there. And I can remember what I was doing on a particular night with my Walkman, walking down Fifth Avenue, and it was a little bit cold and drizzly, you know. And so for me, just as an artistic expression, you know, as a choreographer, you're always looking for music that is going to take you somewhere, and this music certainly takes me a lot of places.
Friday night, 8 p.m., Saturday, 8 p.m., Sunday, 2 p.m. at the Nazareth Arts Center. Easy to find tickets online, and not just Bowie, by the way. We kind of give the full landscape of the show before we dive a little more into Bowie and the specific Bowie music.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The genesis of this program as a whole for me came from sort of two directions. One, you only get to do your first program one time.
Yeah.
And so I really wanted to, in the first program, give the Rochester audiences a take on what they can expect for the future and where my mind and where my artistic kind of vision is going. It's not, of course, holistic, because you can't do everything you're going to do in the future in one program. That was one side of things. The other side was, as I came into the season after the season had already begun and been marketed, it already had a title, Ballet on the Edge. Normally on my first program, I would probably like to do things that were secure, that had been done before, that I would be like a sure thing, knock it out of the park. You know, absolutely guaranteed.
This would be like your colleague Ward Stair over at the RPO in his first performance. I don't know what he did in his first, but he could cue up Beethoven's 9th classic easy. Everyone's going to love it. Not easy, by the way. I am not diminishing. I'm just saying it's a classic. It's well known. People love it. You could have done that. And again, you decided not to.
Well, you know, with Ballet on the Edge, I kind of thought, well, it's like a marriage. You know, it's a new marriage for me. So something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue. And the something old is one of my signature works that has been danced all around the world, in Stuttgart, in Antwerp, in Belgium, you know, through the States, and has always been an audience favorite. There's something new, I thought, well, let's go really new. And that's when I started digging into the possibility of David Bowie. And as I said before, it just meant so much to me in my life. I really felt compelled to do something to his music now.
Kelly, as someone who performs in the company, I'm curious to know the mindset of the performers when you've got an artistic director who comes in and doesn't play it safe like that, has this vision that is sort of daring.
Oh, it's been so much fun. I think, you know, we all weren't exactly sure what to expect, but David has just made the process so much fun and enjoyable. It's been exciting to work to something completely new like David Bowie. As people who do a lot of classical work, it's been really exciting to push the boundaries. And he's just made us feel so comfortable, and it's just great.
Well, I want to know sort of how the specific songs. So there's 9 Bowie songs, right?
9 Bowie songs.
And I want to know if you were able to kind of have your pick and choice, or how do you get the rights to it? Did you have to take what was offered? How did that work?
Well, I started from kind of walked softly. So softly they rode into the night. I forget where that comes from. So I started by inquiring about songs that you might say were B-sides or less kind of, I didn't ask for fame, I didn't ask for Heroes, I didn't ask for Let's Dance, but I asked for songs that I felt could be a little bit under the radar, and started getting a positive reply, and just kept asking. And then finally, about a little over a month ago, some of the publishing houses wrote back and said, okay, what do you really want? And to that end, okay, what I really want, I do want Changes, I do want Heroes, I do want Let's Dance. So it kind of took on a different dynamic.
And so, are you surprised that was the response when they came back and they said, what do you really want? I mean, was that a coup for you?
That was definitely a coup. And it certainly, I felt like I was floating about 3 feet off the ground for a day or two. It was just so exciting to have that happen and then realize that, okay, we really can do something fantastic here.
What are we listening to now, John Kovacs? This is Pretty Things, yeah?
Yeah, fantastic stuff.
John, what would you have asked? If you could get 3 or 6 or 9, what would have been on the top of your Bowie list?
Oh, now you're talking about my high school years, right? These are all the tunes we used to play in the band at the high school dances and around suburban Detroit. Oh, gosh, we did Suffragette City, we did Panic in Detroit, we did Changes. Those were all pretty heavy rockers. But I'm dating myself the first half of the 70s by saying that.
Well, I mean, certainly for me, I wanted to use the music as a tapestry, and virtually everything that I've done over the years, whether I've known it at the time or not, sometimes in hindsight, I've gone back and it's sort of, oh, that's what I was thinking and feeling at that moment. And certainly with this one, I went in wanting to create a thread and a line, you know, and taking from the 60s through the 70s into the 80s and even into the 90s. So that was a lot of fun for me.
Now, these are the parts of the interview that are way out of my expertise, which is great fun for me. But I wouldn't even know where to begin with choreography in mind. I mean, there's a lot that you could do, and there's so many different themes. I mean, John Kovacs, you think about Bowie. Mm-hmm. One of the things we talked about after he passed was how diverse his music catalog
yeah.
is.
Well,
I mean, he is not narrow or limited in any ways, is he?
I mean, you know, it certainly is not unusual for choreographers to use music with a strong popular flavor in the choreography. I mean, we tend to think traditionally about things like, you know, the Stravinsky ballets and Tchaikovsky and that kind of thing. But the fact is, if you've been to ballet lately, which means like in the last 20 years, you know that a lot of times it's recorded music and a lot of times it's influenced by dance music and a lot of other kinds of things. So from that point of view, it fits right in with current practice. I think what is really maybe it's too much hyperbolic to say transformational about the experience of the music, but imagine you'll be in the Nazareth Auditorium with a fantastic sound system, and you'll be hearing these recordings that were, you know, recorded in the best recording studios in the world with some of the best musicians, so they sound awesome. So just to sit there and listen to those tracks on a big sound system at a, you know, relatively significant volume is already wonderful. And then you have the opportunity to listen to the music from an entirely different perspective, because when you're thinking about the songs, usually you're thinking about Bowie performing them. And his performances were so engaging that in some ways seeing Bowie sing these songs on video or on television or in concert, I saw him in 1976, you know, you're kind of listening to the music, but you're kind of drawn in to the personality, the celebrity, the star power of David Bowie or Ziggy Stardust or the Thin White Duke or whoever he happens to be doing at that time. But now, Bowie is absent. We're just hearing the recordings. And when you've got the ballet, when you've got the dancers in front of you and the choreography, you're no longer imagining Bowie performing it. But you're having a lot of fun comparing music that you already know against what you're seeing the dancers do on stage. And I think, in a strange way, it focuses you more on Bowie's music than on his particular performances of it. And I think for a lot of people who are rock fans but maybe don't go out to the ballet very much, this would be a great place to start to really appreciate some of the fantastic artistry that goes with ballet.
That's a pretty good endorsement, David.
I actually, in a sense, I kind of concur. It was very interesting for me, being a very solid fan of David Bowie's for decades now. And as I mentioned before, I can completely link a song to something I was doing at a moment. And for years and years, I've known the lyrics and been able to sing along to Heroes in the car, on my Walkman, you know, whatever, and I've sung along to that song countless times, but when I sat down and had the lyrics printed out and I was looking at the prose, and I was I've put myself in this position of making an artistic comment on this great song, all of a sudden, without the music there and reading the poetry, I realized, wow, this is not an up song. You know, this is cynical. This is, you know, he's saying, you know, I'll be king, you be queen. You know, I take that as a couple. And, you know, can we just be heroes just for one day? Can we get it together to be nice to one another and get through one day? You know, we can be heroes just for one day. So it completely changed the tenor of the song in my mind.
And I've never thought about that, because it's always used as this inspirational theme, right?
And you're singing heroes, as opposed to a commentary on how
hard is it to be just have one day where we're decent.
Right, you know, where we can get along, where we can lift ourselves up, you know. And so it just completely changed the tenor of the song. And I think you'll be really interested to see how that came out visually in the choreography.
Now, I don't ever want to assume with someone like David, who's in remarkable career, but I think the audience assumes you're trying to tell a story or send a message or get someone to feel something, but I don't know if that's true. I mean, what's the goal as the creator?
Well, certainly when you have lyrics, and certainly when you're working with such an iconic person as the work of such an iconic man as David Bowie, you want to try. To give justice to what has been handed you it's not just a blank sheet of paper that I've been handed here. I've been handed a canvas by Picasso, and so certainly from that angle, I spoke about Heroes directly. There are other songs that I chose for specific reasons, because also at the same point in time, I feel that if you're making a ballet about rock and roll, then at some point you need to deal with the battle of the sexes in a way. You need to deal with changes, as in the song, that we've experienced, and certainly a growth in basically everyone's mindset, I think, globally, from where we were before these songs were out there. And, you know, that's why I say, you know, I think for my generation and the generation before me, generations afterwards, it's more than just songs and music. There's real meaning. And some songs... you know, I brought out different things. For instance, I really loved his version, which is a cover of Sorrow. And in that particular version, I really just saw, well, you know, couples that have been together for a long time, they tend to have the same argument over and over and over again. The rhetoric doesn't change. The only thing that changes is that at the end of the argument, do they end up in the same room or in other ends of the house? And so I think Callie's smiling at me right now because I think she understands. She knows the work. So I had in this picture that no matter what was going on, no matter what the discussion, that the woman, the girl in this duet, was just la-di-da-di-da. You know, there's you can't phase me. You know, no matter what you say, no matter what you do, you cannot phase me. Mm. And that's kind of the genesis behind that particular piece. And so basically each of the different sections for me represents something. So if you don't quite get it, don't feel bad, but there is something behind it. And if you get something out of it other than I intended, that's even better.
All right, so I want Kelly to weigh in then, because you were smiling across the table as he told that story.
Oh, absolutely.
What are your thoughts on that? The choreography that he was just talking about specifically?
Oh, well, it's a couple, and it's just really entertaining to see how they interact with each other. You know, she is always smiling and, you know, suave and the female, and then there's the man who falls on the floor, you know, he's working for the relationship. It's just a really fun dynamic. Just one of the pieces. The entire show has such, like, an emotional journey. Each piece is a little different. It's a lot of fun.
And, you know, David just said something very interesting to me, which was, if people get it, if people like get exactly the way it was intended, that's great. If they pick up something different, that's okay too. Now, I kind of thought you were going to say, if they get it, great. If not, I mean, you know, as Kelly said, these are professional athletes. If you've never seen a ballet, you know, they're going to blow you away with just the physical skill and ability, you know, the kind of the power and grace and all those combinations. But you didn't. You said, which I know you actually feel that, but you said it's okay if they feel different things. Different artists have different takes on this, David. This is very, you know, sort of always very interesting to me when you talk to somebody who paints and they say, no, I didn't intend this at all. How could you possibly take this away from this painting? Or a song. You know, everybody has heard a song and for years thought it meant something and found out it meant something entirely different. Robert Frost's poem, The Road Not Taken, you know, is not about rugged individualism. It's making fun of people who think that every choice they make is something to be congratulated as rugged individualism when it's not. But it doesn't bother you if people sort of take it differently. I'm curious about that. Tell me about that.
No, absolutely not. And without being too long-winded, it might be obvious that I wasn't born in the United States. I'm actually from far north Queensland, Australia. And when I came to the United States in 1983... you know, phone calls were really expensive, and we just had Mother's Day yesterday. So instead of calling home on Mother's Day, it was, you know, back in those days where we had that very thin rice paper, you know, par avion, you know, airmail. And, you know, sometimes, and calling home at those points in time, it would be $100, $200, and we weren't our paychecks weren't that big back then. So if I accidentally wrote something that could be taken the wrong way to my mother, I would have one of those $100 or $200 phone calls. For years I've always tried to think, you know, about, especially about the written word. But the reality is, there's always double entendre. There's always two ways to look at things. There's different perspectives. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, I think that it's great that people have different perspectives, different views, bring different thoughts to things. And I think as an artist and provocateur, I mean, I'm all for that. I would love to see one person crying and another person laughing.
Even if they're getting the opposite of what you intend, it's okay.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You want to leave interpretation open-ended, first of all, because you're audience building. So the last thing you want to do is tell the people who didn't get it exactly the way you meant it to go home and never come back. So the first idea is, will you just listen?
But, John, there are artists.
If you can get any reaction at all, that's awesome. Then to get the right reaction is just icing on the cake. But let's get them reacting and feeling it in some way, anyway.
I'm sure if I gave John 5 or 10 minutes to think about it, you could think of some artist, some recording artist, who was a little more abrasive with fans, who maybe had a higher expectation and didn't mind.
How about Roger Waters spitting at the fan, you know, the whole the whole sort of impetus of for the wall. Yeah, I mean, those guys can do that, but they're not really in a position of selling their music in the same kind of way. I think a better parallel here would be if the record company were telling people, well, if you don't really understand this record, just don't buy it.
There's
never been a record company in the world, especially today, who's ever said just don't buy it. And part of what the artist can be is aloof, and that can be part of their attraction. That they hate their fans is why their fans love them. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of those kinds of things. But I mean, when you're trying to draw people to the fine arts, you know, you're already up against a kind of a noise in the culture that is very, very difficult to penetrate. It's hard to get people's attention. And so, you know, the last thing you want to do is sort of drive them away because they don't get it or they aren't smart enough to understand these sophisticated things we're doing. So what you want to say is, come on, check it out. However you react, that's awesome. You might like it. And then hopefully as they begin to refine their sensitivities to the art, then they get a little bit closer to the subtler levels of meaning that artists are really trying to pack into their work.
And I think what is so fun about the idea of Bowie at the Ballet is, you know, you could take in a performance the way David is describing, you know, a couple with that same familiar pattern of argument, the strife, the back and forth, the relationship building, and that may be clear to you no matter what the music is. But then in the context of the music, you get this different layers of meaning. And why did he choose to tell this story with this particular song? What does it say about the music? What is the music saying? How do we sort of, you know, especially with a song like Heroes, which is, again, one of those songs that sort of does get misinterpreted. So I just find that to be great fun. Are there any other sort of previews on performances you want to share?
Well, I mean, just finishing off that, your last point, I think, you know, I want people to use their imagination. You know, I think part of what my goals are in doing well in my job, or how I perceive my job to be, is I want to take people on a 2-hour vacation. I want to take them out of their daily life. I want to put them in a comfortable seat, and I want them to sit and see something that is completely alien to everything that they see every day. It's a completely different world. You don't see people moving like this when you're walking down the street. You're going to understand and interpret things, and nobody's talking. You know, all of these things, it's using your imagination. And I'm just going to set you free for 2 hours. That's my goal.
Kelly, for people who have never been to ballet, they're going to come out this weekend to see these performances. And again, it's Nazareth College Performing Arts Center on Friday at 8, Saturday at 8, and Sunday at 2 p.m. And you can get tickets on the Nazareth Arts Center website, I'm sure through Rochester City Ballet, online as well. But for people who haven't seen the ballet, Kelly, what would you say is something that you know, maybe to expect? You know, when a first-time ballet goer this weekend, what should you expect?
This is definitely a great one to go to. Whenever I've talked to people in the community about this upcoming show, I say it's to Bowie, and their eyes immediately light up. If you're not used to going to see a classical piece, or you think ballet may be something else, this is really for everybody. There is also Adiemos, the first piece, which is absolutely stunning. Also an emotional journey, very flowy, fluid. Then we go into Bowie, and it's edgy and it's fun. If anything, you'll love the music. You'll love the colors of the costumes. You know, you'll love the energy that the dancers give. So I think it's for anyone.
And when it comes to the physical quality of the performance, you know, I think it's worth stressing over and over again, professional athletes. It certainly is true. And it is years of work to get, I think, your body's in position to be able to do these things. How do you sort of appreciate that if you're seeing it for the first time?
Oh, you can see the sweat flying. You know, I feel like this piece really has pushed the dancer's stamina. They go from the first piece, which is on pointe shoes for the females, lots of high jumps, lots of solos, lots of group pieces, lots of running from one side of the stage to the other, into the Bowie piece, which is much more grounded, uses a different part of your body, a different musculature. It's just a very well-rounded show, but they're definitely pushing their bodies.
How does this one rate in terms of physical challenge for performers?
I would say it's pretty challenging. I think from their faces, they're all red at the end, but filled with life. So,
David, you're not just choreographing the challenge. I mean, certainly you want performers who can handle the challenge, but sometimes a great piece is not going to be, you know, a 10 out of 10 on the scale of physical challenge, I assume, yeah?
True. You know, and certainly in this program, there's kind of, as Callie was mentioning, if you didn't like this section, wait 5 minutes. It's like the weather in Rochester. I mean, because it's going to change. I'm certainly taking everyone on a journey. And certainly it's very much about the music. The first piece of the program, Ariemus, which is from an English composer, Carl Jenkins. Some of the music might be familiar to people as Delta Airlines years ago used it as a kind of backing for some of their campaigns. But it really is an amazing piece of music, Ariemus. Actually, the genesis of that was at the time I was still dancing for San Francisco Ballet and at the same time had a small company in Miami. And I took the red eye one night to be picked up by my partner in Miami, and I was staying with him and his wife for that weekend. And we had been talking at the time about doing a Carmina Burana to the off, which is a phenomenal piece of music, but kind of heavy. And somehow, with our conversations back and forth from Bicoastal, I wasn't quite feeling it between the two of us. And on my way into work in San Francisco, I'd heard this piece of music, and I ran back when we had record stores. I went straight to Tower Records. I bought the CD. At the end of the story, my partner Yanis Bekeres, co-choreographer in this piece, picked me up at the airport. Only 15-minute drive from his place to the airport, so we spent the other 45 minutes in the car until his wife came and banged on the car window saying, "What are you guys doing here?" And that was the genesis of that piece. We sat there in the driveway and listened to the whole CD, and it's just an awesome piece of music. Also on the program, I've done another piece to Barber's Adagio for Strings, which of course is just one of the most gorgeous pieces of music written in the 20th century. And then David Bowie. So it's a real journey.
All right. Well, I want to get to a short break. We'll come back and we're going to talk a little bit more with David Palmer about his plans for the City Ballet going forward then. Because I don't think you're stopping at Bowie. I mean, I've heard rumblings that eventually the Beatles or Pink Floyd could make an appearance. Is that right?
That could quite be true.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about that. And I got a couple of listener comments as well regarding the ballet. We'll get to those as well from Anders and Harriet. I love that name, Anders. Much more to come here as we talk about this with David Palmer, the artistic director of the Rochester City Ballet, and Kelly Moeller, a company member for the ballet, along with John Kovach, director of the University of Rochester's Institute for Popular Music. More connections straight ahead. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, you might have seen that the city of Buffalo has a new bicycle master plan. They're reaching out to bicyclists, wanting them to feel welcome and have more space. What about Rochester? What's Rochester's plan for bike lanes and more when it comes to bicycling? We'll talk about that. And in our second hour tomorrow, Adam Frank, University of Rochester astrophysicist, with a new equation on the likelihood of intelligent life in the universe. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Harriet writes to the program, "So glad the Rochester City Ballet is doing interesting things. Love the company. Did your panel happen to see the 1993 Joffrey Ballet piece, Billboards, with music by Prince? It was a huge success in the ballet world, pretty well received, I think." From Harriet. David?
Absolutely. I was a dancer with the Joffrey, but not during the period of time that they were dancing Billboards, but I did get to see it quite a few times. It was a very, very fantastic piece.
Yeah, and you're hearing a little less dance now. John Kovach, a big smile on your face. Where does this one rank in the Bowie canon?
Well, gosh, it's got to be right up there. If you were going to say, you know, three or four songs that are associated with the career of David Bowie, this has definitely got to be one of them. And partly because of the different ways it's been repurposed through the years, right? I mean, that's how we really associate with artists, is when the songs continue to be used and adapted in new kinds of ways. And this one, who doesn't know that this is David Bowie? I mean, really.
David, this one makes an appearance.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Any more you want to tell us about this?
Well, this was one of the ones I had actually started creating the basic choreography for this piece on another song. And then when they opened up the catalog and said that, well, you know, ask for what you want, I immediately went, okay, Let's Dance, because that's the, I just felt that had to be sort of the cherry on top and the closing statement to the work. And I think it, you'll see when, you'll get my point when you see the end of the work as to what I was getting at. And I think that, as John said, this song is so, it's so, you equate it so much to David. You know it exactly. The minute you hear it, the first few beats, you know exactly what's coming next. And I think, in a sense, I wanted to leave the stage with the kind of statement that it's still going.
Well, I want to ask Kelly. I don't know how much of a Bowie aficionado you are, and there's no right or wrong answer here, but I'm curious to know if this has sparked a little more interest in you in the artist.
Absolutely. That's actually a funny question. I've been at the gym a lot with my injury, and I've put on David Bowie radio pretty much every day. It's really inspired an interest.
In recent weeks.
In recent weeks.
We're not talking
weeks.
Before. Okay.
No, yeah. Since this piece has started. I've been biking at the gym to David Bowie, learning all about him. So it's
and John,
been really fun.
John Kovach, sometimes the passing of an artist rekindles not only the interest and the admiration from someone like David. I mean, David just gushes right. with these beautiful stories that he could go
well,
back
to. Well, he and I grew up with this music, so it doesn't matter what anybody else says. We're going to keep listening to it, love it.
No, but, isn't that pretty cool to hear someone like Kelly, a younger person who's maybe kind of discovering it more now? Sometimes the passing of an artist will do that.
It really, yeah. I mean, look at just recently with Prince. I mean, it was especially frustrating there because none of his music is on Spotify. And so unless the CD stores around town actually sort of had those CDs hanging. I mean, who would have known that it was going to happen? It was tough to get a hold of some of that stuff. So yeah, but you look at all the fuss over that. So yeah, it really does have a way of refocusing and having us ask the question, you know, what was this person's historical importance really? You know, and I always say it's very difficult when a star dies like that, especially suddenly, to really accurately assess their historical importance, because so much of what we know about people like Bowie and about Prince has to do with their celebrity. That is, that they were famous people. And so that distorts our sense of how important they will be once all of us who view them as famous people, you know, are gone, and as new generations who take it over. For example, you know, there was nobody any bigger in the 1930s than, say, somebody like Fred Astaire, who, you know, sang some of the most famous popular songs that were eventually made hits by other singers. They originally appeared in those Fred and Ginger movies during the 1930s. They were like the number six box office draw in the country. Yet, how many people still have an emotional attachment to the music of Fred Astaire and remember where they were the first time they heard it? Well, probably where they were was nowhere, because they weren't going to be born for another 30 years. You know, I mean, so once that happens, then it really does allow you to kind of figure out, okay, what was the real importance? And, you know, somebody like me would argue that Fred Astaire was really, really important. But that might not have been the way people viewed it when they were thinking about him 10 years ago or later. So with a guy like Bowie, my view is that his historical importance is very high, especially in the 1970s. What happens after that is a continuation of Bowie's work, an extension of his artistry, an extension of his celebrity, but maybe doesn't make the same kind of impact in the history of rock music that he made when he was first showing up with Ziggy Stardust and Aladdin Sane and Pinups and Young Americans and Station to Station. I mean, those records really impacted the unfolding of popular music in a very, very significant way. And I would still say that even if he had, if he wasn't as popular at the end of his days as he was back at that time.
Yeah, you mentioned Prince. I mean, so much interest in the artists in his work now. And even my four-year-old son was listening. Well, he was listening to me, listening to Little Red Corvette. And he said, "Who is this?" I said, "Buddy, this is Prince. You're going to hear his music for a long time." He said, "I like this song. What's it about?" I said, "It's about a little red Corvette."
Just don't try to explain to him what Lady Cab Driver is about.
Yeah,
that's
no.
Just don't want to go there until he's reached the age of maturity.
No, but I love the interest.
And as John was saying, I think one of the really, really interesting things about Bowie, and maybe Prince is a little bit in that category too, and when you mentioned Pinups and Station to Station and Let's Dance, the album, for every album, you were in such anticipation mm-hmm. for the release date, because what was this one going to be?
That's right.
I mean, it was going to be revolutionary. Every album was going to be, it wasn't going to be more of the same. There was still the essence was going to be there. You right. knew that incredible, unique voice, but the arrangements. I mean, the ways he just kept reinventing himself mm-hmm. was amazing.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this when we did the show after Bowie's passing, was that here's a guy who made changing his image part of his brand. And this is usually, this idea of any kind of change for any artist is usually a very tough thing, because fans want an album that sounds like the last one that they liked. And so the minute you start to go someplace else, the fans start to react and say, oh, I don't like it, you know, this kind of thing. But what Bowie was able to do was, and actually, music and stylistically, that's probably what a lot of us who are into the music appreciate. But I think what a lot of fans appreciate is the change of image, you know, the new character, the kind of, and so then the music kind of follows that, I think, for a lot of fans. And Bowie, because of the theatricality of his presentation, was able to sort of continue to shift, and that made it exactly as David was saying, so that every time he came out with something, you expected it to be kind of different. And it really gave him the advantage in being able to stretch his career out much past the usual shelf life, which for most artists, it's maybe 3 or 4 years in the limelight before you're starting to kind of ride the tail end of your career. But Bowie, like a lot of artists, was able to find a way to sustain it. I mean, I say that without Bowie, there's no Madonna, because that's exactly what Madonna was doing in the 80s. And again, a kind of a dance-based, performance-based kind of thing. Compare that to somebody like Michael Jackson, for example, who maintained relatively the same persona from about Off the Wall all the way through into the early 90s. And then, of course, the persona started to get a little wacky, and we don't need to go there today.
Well, we're talking, thanks to the Rochester City Ballet, we are talking about all of these related issues, because they are, they've got Ballet on the Edge. They've got performances coming up Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 8 p.m. Friday, 8 p.m. Saturday, 2 p.m. on Sunday at the Nazareth Arts Center. And their performance of Bowie, and then some. And I want to read just a short comment from a listener named Anders, who said, excuse me for 1 second, gentlemen. Anders writes to the program and just said that he recalls going to see Metallica with the orchestra. And he thought it was so cool to see Metallica and an orchestra together. Great to hear Ballet and Bowie together. Great to see them reaching out to people like me. That's from Anders. So, David, his mind went back to Metallica and the orchestra, which I guess that was some years ago, John Kovach.
Yeah, I think the album was called S&M that they did with, I think it was the San Francisco Orchestra, wasn't it? I don't know. There's probably a listener who can Google that for us.
Anders
may
be able to tell us, but thank you for the note there. And that's part of the point. Though, to stress, the point is not to alienate or to only bring in a new audience. The point is to, I think, bring in even more people to see the talent on display at the Rochester City Ballet. And David, beyond Bowie, we've been talking a lot about Bowie, but beyond Bowie, you know, you've got interest in choreographing U2, Beatles, Pink Floyd. Tell me about some of those.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, when I took this position in November of last year, one of the first things I wanted the board to do for me and with me was create a strategic plan. Because moving, all of those things, family and all of that, I wanted to understand the commitment from the board in moving forward. Along with that, of course, it was my responsibility, and I feel it. I feel it heavy as a responsibility to create an artistic strategic plan, and I do want to. My vision basically for the company is I look at Rochester City Ballet as a window. A window to the dance world. The neat thing about a window is you can look in two directions. You can look outside and you can look inside. And so I want to look outside, and that's part of what I've done in this program with Liam Scarlett's Viscera and the couple from Miami City Ballet, who I've invited to come in. And so that's something from the outside that I've brought to the stage here in Rochester. At the same point in time, I want companies and other organizations from around the world, around the country, to look at Rochester City Ballet and what we're creating here, and maybe this Bowie work, and take it there as kind of us being ambassadors for the city. But basically, the Bowie I see as part of a triptych or trio of works that I am ambitious to do over the next several years, this being step one. Step two, the next work I would like the company to perform is a full evening work to the music of Pink Floyd and the London Symphony Orchestra's orchestration of Pink Floyd. So it's a combination of both. And then thirdly, I'm looking at either the Stones or the Beatles. And so that's something that, as part of something that is consistent with the company, that I want our audience to know we do that. At the same point in time, I want to bring challenging classical and neoclassical works and also choreographers from outside. I'm looking at next season to bring one of the most renowned choreographers from Belgium. He was the resident choreographer of the Royal Ballet of Flanders for 15 years, Danny Roussel. So that's another thing, and also bringing outside artists to work with our dancers so that they have that experience of different creative minds and processes.
Kelly, is there a particular style? I mean, he mentioned classical, neoclassical. He mentioned these artistic ideas that he has going forward. Is there a particular style or genre that you prefer as a performer?
Oh, neoclassical, what we're doing with Bowie, it's just so much fun. But that's one thing that's so nice about Rochester City Ballet is we kind of do it all. So it's nice to, you know, move in new ways.
Well, and Tracy, a listener named Tracy emails the program and says, thanks for the spotlight on something that I admit I've never seen. How does Rochester City Ballet rank nationally? That's from Tracy. I don't know the answer to that. Well,
I mean, Rochester City Ballet is a smaller organization, so budgetary-wise, you know, we don't compete with companies like New York City or San Francisco or Houston. However, the reality is me personally, my path in the world of ballet, I began with the Australian Ballet. Then I was with the Joffrey Ballet while Robert Joffrey was still alive, the San Francisco Ballet, Miami City Ballet, and the Royal Ballet of Flanders. And as a guest artist, I've danced with companies all over the world. So the reality is where I lived at and the world I lived at as a dancer was in the ether at the stratosphere. And so though we may not have the budget of other companies that we might envy for the time being, that nonetheless, that doesn't mean that I'm not striving to put out the quality of work every bit as good and maybe even more interesting than some of the aforementioned very big, very big, very good companies.
Well, then let me just follow that up to the listener's question with what brought you here? What brought you to Rochester, David? Because you've been here for, remind our audience, you got here when?
In November.
So, you know, it's been 6 months. So what brought you here?
Well, I saw room for upward mobility. Let's put it that way. And also, I saw a community that I felt would be really wonderful for my daughters to grow up in. I have a five-year-old and three-year-old daughter, and my five-year-old is just about to go into school. And so I was thinking that this would be a really good time if I was going to move the family. And certainly in D.C., where I was previously, it's a very expensive city for education and to make sure that your children are getting a good education. And certainly the schools here in Rochester, well, in the environs of Rochester, I understand that there is some inequality in different areas, but there are also some phenomenal areas for schooling. And I just felt artistically I could do a lot of really good work with this organization. And for my family, this could be a really nice place to be.
And so is the goal to help grow the ballet? I mean, you talk about budget-wise, you know, certain restrictions, ability to compete with others. What is the long-term goal?
The long-term goal is to broaden the horizon of the company in every which way. Bigger, bolder, better. So yes, grow the budget. Yes, grow the level of the performances, grow the production value, invest more into our production of Nutcracker so it becomes a gleaming jewel again, anew. Get out into the community and be more engaged with the community. I haven't gotten to meet with the school system yet, but I'd like to see us involved somehow as being part of the solution to some of the issues that are in the community. But certainly I want to reach out and bring dance into every household in the area.
I think what you just mentioned as well, maybe working with the school district, maybe making it even more accessible. There may be a viewpoint that ballet is for the privileged, that it, there are barriers to entry. How do we change? First of all, is that true? Second of all, how do we change it if it's true?
I think that, you know, there, education is everything. The only barriers, I believe, that we have in the United States in this day and age is accessibility. And certainly for a low-income family who may or may not have a vehicle to drive their child, who may or may not be able to afford paying tuition, it's going to make some things prohibitive. And also, I think it becomes generational, too. For some people in the community, they might be looking, and their priority might be that they get the first child in the family into college, and that would be really a great and an awesome thing to do. However, I think there are ways that, you know, through dance, I've certainly known many, many individuals who got their way to college, who improved their life exactly through the world of ballet. So, you know, I think it's, I can certainly see the challenges for people at a certain income level, and how thinking of concentrating on something that is just so beautiful is going to be a big positive thing in their lives. But look at Misty Copeland and look at her story. And she's not the only story in that mm-hmm. way and manner. And be it ballet or be it music or be it straight art, visual or photography, there's just more than one way to get there. And I think that when you do it through art, it brings something extra special to your life, and that you can enjoy the whole of the world a little bit more.
Kelly, this is your third season with the company, is that right?
Yes.
Would you like to see the company reaching out even more so to reach kids who might not view ballet, might not view dance as part of an option for a future?
Oh, absolutely. We've done performances in the past where inner city schools have been bussed into the shows, and they're honestly some of our favorites. The reactions we get, the smiles on their faces, we get to high five them at the end. And it's also cool because in the audience, they're always, you know, they're cheering us on, they're laughing, they're talking out loud. It's great. We love to see that.
John Kobach, in the history of music, is there any set rule? I mean, do most successful pop musicians come from privilege or not? I think there's probably plenty that do come from.
There are few, but mostly and those that do, they wouldn't advertise it because that's not considered very rock and roll, you know, to come from a lot of money. But I have to say, listening to what David is saying, this is remarkable and wonderful for our city. And I don't know if people really appreciate what we've got coming under his leadership here, the bigger, better, bolder, and all the pragmatic ways in which he's thinking about building audience are just fantastic, and in many ways just what this city needs as it begins to really sort of assert itself as more of a performing arts city. I see that happening, especially through, you know, my directorship of the Institute of Performing Arts at the University of Rochester. This is just fantastic, and all the ways he's talking, from my point of view, are exactly the right ways to be thinking about dance in the city. So I think we're in for a really fun ride here, and welcome to Rochester, David.
Well, thank you, John.
You think about what David's presence, what John just said, you think about Ward Stair and the RPO,
right,
and the fact that they will give you Beethoven's Ninth, and they will also give you the music of Raiders of the Lost Ark performed live. You know, they do things for kids. And there's so many different artistic companies in this city right now that are thinking broadly, but not leaving out the classics lovers. I mean, that's so important. And so you've been hearing that story this hour all throughout. Just a reminder one more time, David, for the audience who came in late, what's coming up this weekend?
Ballet on the Edge at Nazareth, and that's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 8 p.m., 8 p.m., and 2 p.m., and for those who missed in the macro, Ballet on the Edge, you're going to be doing what this weekend?
A new world premiere work to the music of David Bowie, and the title for the piece is Under the Moonlight, which you might know from the lyrics of another famous song. That's the question.
They got the rights to 9 David Bowie songs, and as if you missed David mentioning earlier this hour, really a coup in terms of what they were able to get access to for the music. Far as we know, the first new artistic performance using Bowie material since his passing. Is that right?
Not exactly right, okay. But it's the most major one. Actually, this week, the Washington Ballet is doing a premiere, which they've entitled Bowie, but they it's actually three Bowie songs and other music written around it.
Okay.
So it's not quite, but it's the biggest.
Certainly the biggest, and congratulations on that. And they've got a lot more to come. You can find much more online. What's your website, Kelly?
RochesterCityBallet.org.
CityBallet.org. And any other brief things you want to mention coming up this season beyond this weekend? Go ahead, David.
I think we're looking forward to our Ballet Soiree, which is our big fundraising event out at Lake Canandaigua in August, August 12th. So some people might be receiving invitations in the mail over the summer. Please open them up and come and join us for a great party there, too.
And John Kovach, anything you want to mention? You guys always have concerts and cool stuff coming up at the Institute for Popular Music.
Oh, yeah. Well, our fall concert, it looks like, is going to be the Eagles and what I call the Avocado Mafia. That is Southern California rock. And then in the spring, it's going to be a celebration of Sgt. Pepper, the 50th anniversary.
Very good. Well, great to have all of you here. Continued good healing on your injury
thank
and get back
much.
With the company. So thank you, Kelly. Nice talking to you. Great having you here. David, cheers. Really very interesting stuff, and I look forward to more conversations with you and the company in the future.
Thank you, Evan.
And John Kovach, great to see you as well from the University of Rochester, sir.
My pleasure.
Thank
My
you
pleasure.
Very much. Maybe we'll close with a little bit of Bowie. David Bowie, and again, RochesterCityBallet.org. If you want more information. A little Bowie music. Have a great afternoon. I'm Evan Dawson. Our thanks to Kat Schwarz, engineer, and Megan Mack, producer. We will see you tomorrow.